This year, the Oldest Profession podcast is producing the Old Pro Project to celebrate the anniversary of the first sex worker-led protest in the U.S. To learn more, listen to our episode, Why January 25th Matters. Follow the hashtag Old Pro Project and go to our website, theoldestprofessionpodcast.com/OPP for Old Pro Project.
Welcome to the Peep Show Podcast.
News and stories from the sex industry.
With Jesse and PJ Sage.
Welcome back to another episode of the Peep Show Podcast. This is a recording of a live panel on sex work and self-care. We have panelists who talk about everything from addiction and recovery to counseling and therapy to creating a reasonable schedule and work-life balance as a sex worker. Is there enough kink and flirtation in your life right now? Aorta Films creates lusty, opulent, glorious fuckery. Their films are full of beautifully shot, super hot queer porn featuring a large range of bodies, identities, kinks, and dynamics. This month, check out Aorta's newest release, Pink Lemonade, featuring Daemonim X and Scarlet. Good dollies should be seen and not heard. So why does Scarlet go looking for trouble during a service session with Daddy Daemonim X? One misdeed calls for a spanking. A second warrants reprogramming. Could this have been what Scarlett wanted all along? $9 a month on Patreon gets you full access to Aorta's library of 60-plus short and feature films with a new film released on the first of each month. Or back them at the $17 a month level and get a download of that month's film delivered straight to your inbox. Check them out at aortafilms.com.
Hey, I'm Adrian, one of the hosts of After Adult Podcast. My porn name should be Mozart Fremont, but you probably know me better by my actual porn name, Siri.
I'm Rachel, but my porn name would be Woody 16th Avenue.
After Adult is a podcast about life and porn.
I don't actually watch porn.
I don't really watch that much porn either. I probably watch more than you, but I mean, most of the time it kind of would feel like going to work on my day off.
You 100% watch more than me because I don't watch porn. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for After Adult.
Or visit afteradult.com and follow us on Instagram at After Adult.
All right. Hi. Welcome. I am Jesse Sage from the Peep Show podcast. I am the co-host of the podcast and the co-founder of Peep Show Media with my co-partner in crime.
PJ Sage. The other co.
And 3 months ago, we started a once a month Peep Show Live, which is what we're doing tonight. This is our fourth one. And every month we pick a theme. And this month we chose self-care as the theme. And we've brought in four panelists that we thought would be great talking about different aspects of sex work and self-care. So I'm going to let Courtney introduce them. But first, I'm going to do some Peep Show stuff. So we have a new intern for Peep Show Media, which is really great. Liz, who's here with us tonight, this is the first event that she's participating in. She's been doing some planning with us. And also the theme of tonight was actually her idea, kind of coming out of her interest in her college studies. So I'm going to let her say hi and say a little bit about herself, and then we will go to the next thing.
Hi. So the idea for this panel partly came about, brought up my interest in counseling and therapy and the crossover for sex workers, which was a thread that appeared in one of the previous panels on disability and sex work. So I'm also currently researching the emotional labor of camming with PJ. So I feel that self-care just intersects a lot of my interests and projects right now and is a really good topic for a panel in general.
Great. Yeah. And we're super excited to have Liz. And Liz has taken over our Instagram and has started a TikTok and is doing things that like I am too old to do. So I'm super stoked about that. And is also working with us on a lot of other projects. We also co-moderating with me tonight is Courtney Trouble, who is our marketing liaison. So Courtney, hi.
Hi.
And Courtney has done several of these.
Several of these. Also very interested in self-care and issues of wellness. I started the Sex Worker Student Union at my school a couple years ago with some folks so that we could try to address like wellness for sex workers on campus. And while I was doing that, I was also their wellness advocate for their administrative group. So it was a very interesting academic situation. And I'm happy to see how some of those theories apply to sex work. So of course I'm happy to be here as a moderator, but I'm also really excited to listen to all of you. Okay, so Ashley Juliet is a lesbian porn performer and content creator who's been in the industry for 3 years. She's also been sober for 3 years. She loves staying connected to her community and helping her peers. Over quarantine, she created a sex work only AA group for other struggling sex working alcoholics. Outside of her sobriety, she also enjoys photography and shoots other sex workers. You can find her on Twitter at slutappeal. Awesome. And also you should follow the AA group at twitter.com/sexworkersAA. And we agreed we were going to ask you guys little questions in between each of the introductions. So if you would like to tell us something that you're really interested, excited about bringing to the conversation today.
Definitely, my big thing is the AA meeting that I started. We have had maybe throughout quarantine, 30 or 40 sex workers come through. We've had people who have never been to AA meetings and now are members who come every week, twice a week. We have been given out chips and we do birthday celebrations. So definitely what I am excited to bring to the table is just talking about sobriety and how it can be embedded in sex work, because I know that sometimes it becomes controversial with, the shots for, tipping and all that, but it's definitely a way that you can navigate through and still enjoy and feel connected to the community.
Okay, next up, I'm going to introduce Chelsea Poe. Chelsea Poe is a Dutch-American filmmaker and a porn performer. She has been an advocate for the removal of transphobic language in porn and has been included in the Trans 100 in 2015. Chelsea has pushed for inclusion of trans women within mainstream porn, including being the first trans woman to be a model on punk porn site God's Girls. Her work has covered experimental film, BDSM, queer, and lesbian themes. She has earned 15 AVN nominations and has screened her work around the world. Her Twitter is ChelseaPoe666. Her Instagram is FakeChelseaPoe, and she owns a membership site called ChelseaSubmits.com. And Chelsea, is there anything not in your bio that you're excited to bring to the table today?
Yeah, I cam 5 days a week. So I think during the whole pandemic, just having the grind of camming and sex work every day, I feel like it's kind of a unique thing to come at it because you have to almost detach your everyday earnings from just what your life is right now, because I feel like it's just so hard because everything's kind of condensed in one, especially if you work at home right now. I feel like camming definitely has that element to it that I think I've had to really view in a different way since the pandemic happened.
Definitely. I'm really happy you're here. Jet Setting Jasmine is a licensed clinical psychotherapist with a strong emphasis on intimacy post-injury and intimacy post-illness. She's the owner and lead therapist of full-service therapy practice, Blue Pearl Therapy. Jasmine is an international sex educator and master fetish trainer. Jasmine co-owns with partner King Noir 3-time award-winning Royal Fetish Films, and together have had over 20 years of experience as adult entertainers, directors, and producers. Their work on the decolonization of sex and porn in politics has been featured in Huffington Post, Rolling Stone, Paper Magazine, Vice, Playboy, Forbes, Cosmopolitan, BBC, Psychology Today, and more. Socials are Twitter, Jet Set Jasmine, and BluePearlTherapy.org. Jet Set Jasmine, that's, you're bringing a lot. What else could you possibly be bringing?
I said the short version. So I am coming to this space really thinking about balancing, because there are a lot of sex workers that balance family, intergenerational care, a civilian job, and intimacy, and, you know, all of those things. And I think my life intersects in all of those different ways. So I'm hoping to bring some of my lived experience to tonight's conversation.
Awesome. I'm sure we're all looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. And then Stacy Swim, old friend of mine, seeing your beautiful face. Stacy Swim is a counselor and wellness coach at Grow, Stretch, Heal. She draws from over 20 years' experience in the adult industry to provide a culturally competent individual, couples, and crisis counseling to sex workers and their families. I want to say that one more time because it was a short bio, so I can say it twice and not lose much time. Okay. She draws from over 20 years of personal experience in the adult industry to provide culturally competent counseling, individual, couples, and crisis counseling to sex workers and their families. That's pretty rare, Stacy. What else are you excited to bring to the table tonight?
What I'm really excited about talking about tonight is asking for help. It's been a lesson that I've had to work on this year. And I think sex workers, we are, you know, we're like lone wolves, or like, you know, we're really used to being independent and kind of not wanting to depend on other people for things because we've just learned not to. Right? So I think we have to learn to seek help and know where to find it. And I'm excited to kind of go over some of my ideas about that tonight.
Nice. So all of you brought up a lot of different like angles that you want to come at for this. And so I'm kind of curious, just to start this conversation out, what all of you think about when you think about self-care? Like, what, how would you define self-care? And maybe like a broader question, or a narrow one, I guess, depending on how you think about it, is what do you think that looks like for sex workers? So maybe the overarching question is like, what is self-care? What does that look like for sex workers? And that can go in like whatever direction you want to based on your where you're coming at it from. So Chelsea, do you want to start with that?
For me, what was like the biggest struggle really early into the lockdown is I felt like all my structure for the things that I was really, that felt the most positive with sex work for me is like being on set with people and like having that creative exchange. And all of a sudden that really disappeared. And then it was just felt like my job was singularly just camming. And I think for me, like I needed to really come up with a structured schedule around that, where I feel like I'm getting out into the world and like even just going in nature or just going for a walk or whatever to get out. I feel like that was like probably the biggest thing for me personally, because I feel like I needed that structure to make it feel like there was something progressing forward. And I think that's definitely not for everyone, because some people, that idea of such a structured schedule almost brings more anxiety and is almost a thing that isn't really a self-care thing. But for me, I think that's like definitely been the biggest thing that's helped. I also think having a therapist who has worked with sex workers has really helped me during this, because I feel like we're all just in such an unknown situation. And I think especially with sex work, you have so many ups and downs of it. Very early in the pandemic, I was making a lot more than usual and actually not having to work as much. But as it went on, there's been months that have been extremely slow. And I think it's just been trying to find something positive about my day, whether it's just going out, like a walk or whatever, just something to feel like there's other movement other than just solely everything being about sex work and one very specific kind of sex work that can be really draining. So I think for me, the biggest self-care thing is just being able to find a therapist that works with sex workers and just finding a way to have a normal day. And meditation has also really helped me too, just to be able to separate after work all the negative or even positive feelings away from that, so it doesn't feel like, you know, sex work, just camming, isn't like enveloping my whole life, my whole existence.
I totally understand what you're saying, because I noticed that too at the beginning, which is that like when I went into my interactions with my clients, I often brought a lot of like my life and talking about what I was doing and what was happening and interesting things. And a month or two into the pandemic, I was like, I don't actually have anything to say. Nothing has happened. I haven't left my house. No, like I used to do for my OnlyFans, a lot of these like vlogs where I would talk to my fans about what I was doing. And then I was like, those just dried up, because what am I going to say? I'm
I woke up and I made some coffee and I wandered around my house. And so like trying to figure out like how you're going to kind of draw some energy, I think is a really important topic. And I also like one of the things that you brought up that I hope kind of goes across what a lot of people said is that, you know, a schedule may work for you in a way that it doesn't work for other people. So when we talk about like self-care, we're not talking about a one size fits all. Like this isn't a how to live your best life seminar. Cause like, we don't know like what your best life is or what self-care looks like for individual people. So instead just to kind of open up to like, how have we been dealing with this? So, Jasmine, what do you think? What does it look like for you?
Yeah. So, it's interesting how it's been, really like Chelsea said, like what was working at the beginning or and needing to really adjust. And I think, you know, something that's really important for folks that are listening is like self-care by definition is us protecting our well-being, like actively protecting our well-being and our happiness for that matter. And it's like, well, what's well-being for me? How do I know I'm well? You know, for some people, it's like, oh, like I just like took a bath with a bath bomb and like a self-care, right? And I'm saying in that voice because that's how I read it. And I'm like, bullshit, my bills have to be paid for me to feel happy and to feel secure. But not like being okay with not shitting on somebody else's version of self-care and not adopting it for myself, really going, okay, what really does make you feel grounded? What makes you feel safe and secure? And like defining self-care for myself. One of the things that I, in the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, kind of like you, Chelsea, like, I got to make money. I got to keep it. Like, I got to stay earning at this rate. And then starting to experience burnout and then going like, okay, self-care is not at this point anymore making a certain amount of money. Self-care at this point is having a certain amount of time off of work. So it's shifted and I'm okay with, it may fluctuate at the, you know, at the top of the year and maybe I'll go back into grind mode, but I know that I have a couple of different tools of what self-care looks like depending on what life looks like, you know, externally and within my family. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Stacey, what about for you?
So I like everything that everyone is saying so far. I'm a really serious therapy junkie. Like I've been going for years. I am a professional therapy client. and I have a lot to say about that as we get more into my notes and stuff. So therapy 100%. Also minimalism for me, I really do not care about a lot of the things that other people care about. And therefore my monthly expenses are pretty low. Like I'm just not keeping up with any Joneses or worrying about clothes or bags. And of course the quarantine's only helping that. But that was kind of how I was throughout, you know, I'm not doing sex work anymore, but even when I really was making sex work money, I was trying not to spend it on those things. I was spending it on activism, which I also wouldn't encourage. So, but yeah, I keep my expenses so lean and don't do a lot. And I was able to really, really hustle throughout since the beginning of the pandemic. I had a job delivering weed and like, that was like cool. And I got to be out while everybody else was in. And so I think that helped me not go kind of stir crazy. But I got sick of that job and I got a second job and I really hustled for 2 months and paid all my bills through the end of December. And so I just like quit working for other people and I'm like going back into working for myself with my counseling. And I'm starting a business, another business that is not for this conversation, but yeah, so that for me, just like keeping things really simple so that I could have this space right now, because now it's the space that is the self-care, the space to be more creative and to get myself back into a place where I'm doing work that serves people, because I liked delivering weed. People are always happy when I show up with weed, but doing the counseling and the yoga is really a lot more fulfilling in other ways. And even though financially I'm trying to figure out like how to make that work, but keeping my monthly expenses low has helped with that.
Yeah. And Ashley, what would you, what do you think? What would you add here?
For me, I feel like in quarantine, when I'm going into work overload, I find myself losing my identity at times because I feel like I go full Ashley, full sex work. My mom knows I do sex work, and it's come to the point where when I'm with my friends and she happens to be there, she calls me by my sex work name. So sometimes I feel like I don't even know who I am anymore outside of this sex work self. So I feel like for quarantine for me, I spent a lot of time dissecting who I am outside of work, you know, because now work is kind of all we have when we're locked up and we can work whenever we want because we're sex workers. And I was like, oh, I'm doing so good for myself. I'm working all the time. But then I'm like, what do I want outside of work? Like, what is going to make me happy? Like, what are hobbies that make me happy outside of what makes sex work me happy? You know, just like waking up and cooking or even just showering. Showering not because I'm going to go on cam or I'm going to, you know, film a video, but just because I need to take care of myself. And, you know, even just calling people who can refer to me outside of my sex work name and just remembering that I am a person outside of my work self, because I feel like they are so similar because I try to be as genuine as possible. It becomes a bit muddled and I forget like what my hobbies are and what I enjoy outside of when it's something's being filmed. And sleep, I think sleep is super important, not to oversleep too much because then I just sleep all day and I sleep into a depression hole, but kind of maintaining a decent sleep schedule and, you know, doing something every day that grounds me. For me, it's movies. So one of my self-care like necessities is I'm trying to watch a movie every night because it helps me get out of my head and, you know, not check my phone and seeing, you know, what's happening on OnlyFans or on Twitter and actually just getting away from it. And then my last thing would be taking like a day or two off social media completely has changed. Like, you 24 hours off social media makes a huge difference in your mental health. And you need to try to do that more. Even if it's once a month, if you take one day off social media, you'll feel a difference. So I feel like that's what I got.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been interesting. I mean, this, I didn't really think about this as like a topic, but it's been coming up so much in our other panels as well, that there's something about this pandemic that, like, given our nature of work, is actually really hard to balance, especially, you know, because it's then hard to not just work because there's nothing else to do. And I keep hearing this over and over again in conversations that we've had, like, there's something about the pandemic that's like turning everyone into like workaholics in a way that's like damaging to mental health. Or even if you're not working all the time, for that to be the only thing that you have because there isn't anything else going on. And I think that keeping that in check and like trying to balance, like, how does that make me feel and what's going on here? And seems to be really like an important theme that a lot of sex workers are dealing with right now. So Courtney, I'll pass it over to you.
I was going to say, like, one of the things I do now is at the beginning of all of this, it was always like, oh, I'm sorry, this is taking me so long. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not fully there for that yet. There was a lot of like trying to catch up with the situation and be like, actually, you don't have to apologize anymore. It's okay. You didn't do that thing. It's okay. You're behind on that thing. Just slow down. We have a long ways to go before this is over. So my part of self-care, I learned from this trial and tribulation that it's worth it to take as long as you need to for a piece of work, as long as you know, financial need doesn't butt heads with it, which is part of maybe, you know, some of that balance that we could talk about. Another quick round fire question, sort of about your personal trials and tribulations. Can you think of a moment in your personal experience that, especially in sex work, where you came to understand what, like, why self-care was important to you, why it was needed, good or bad? For me, my moment was like, oh, I really need to slow down.
Well, I can say for me that I am still dealing with whorephobia to this day, even though I'm not getting paid through full service sex work anymore. I still do night flirt and stuff. So, but The horror phobia is so deep and so real, and getting away from that was one of the reasons I wanted to quit. That was like one of the motivating factors. So the way that I haven't gotten away from that is pretty disappointing. And today I started pharmaceutical antidepressants for the first time in my life. So I'm pretty excited about that too. Like, this is all just been, there's some level of like, just fucking accept it and brave new world. You know, that book, Brave New World, where like everyone just got a pill to just fucking accept that this shit sucks. So I think that if anyone who's listening is thinking about retiring or transitioning and getting away from the horror phobia is part of your motivation, I guess I would warn you that it's not going to go away. And it doesn't stop hurting and triggering something really deep and hysterical inside of me.
I think for me, the turning point was when I had an agent when I was doing mainstream, and I got put into some situations that I did not sign up for, and having to really advocate for myself and realize that I had to speak up and make sure that I wasn't getting myself into situations that I didn't like, and realizing that, oh my gosh, like, I have to be my own boss. I have to advocate for my own safety. I am the one who has to protect myself. I mean, you know, bad stuff can happen regardless, but you have to be confident to voice, you know, your boundaries. And sometimes people won't listen. So you're going to have to make sure that you have a plan of action just to make sure that you're safe in some situations. So for me, it was, yeah, just being on set and getting into things that I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I think I've had a few times that really, like, I hit burnout. Once was, I think it was like maybe like 4 years ago, I was traveling a lot at the time. And I was like barely home for like 2 months, going from Michigan to LA and back to the Bay like twice in 2 weeks. And I had to go to the ER. I had a UTI that wouldn't go away because I was going through exhaustion at the time. So I had to like go and get an IV and all that stuff. And that was the first time where I'm like, maybe I shouldn't just like push all this stuff aside and just be like, oh, I can just put it into my art. And really being like, oh, I should probably start seeing a therapist and get that stuff out. I also had another one where I basically cammed, like, I think it was like 7 days a week for like a full month before going to Germany for some screenings. And as soon as I got to Berlin, I was sick for like an entire week of my 10 days there. And I think that also made me realize, be like, okay, you really have to take care of yourself so you can actually do these things and want to do these things. I feel like I just like burnt myself out until I physically couldn't anymore. And that's when I was like, wow, I really need to get all this mental health stuff in check and just figuring out how to stay in a positive place mentally and physically so I could actually get the things accomplished I wanted to get accomplished.
Thank you. How about you, Jasmine? Was there like a pivotal moment for you? I mean, you've been through education and like this has been a whole trajectory. There must not have been like one moment.
No, and it's important that we recognize that we're going to go through a lot of moments. Like, it's a burnout industry, you know, and a part of the work that I'm doing is helping my colleagues learn how to sustain themselves in this industry. And part of it is being completely realistic, like, you know, like, no, you can't work 7 days a week. I mean, you can, you did it, and learning your limits and as you grow, like what I was doing 10 years ago is not gonna fly, you know, now with a 2-year-old, right? So there were two moments that come to mind as of late is when I was looking back at pictures through my pregnancy and right at postpartum, because like, again, sex work, like you can do it anytime. It's like, ooh, got a belly. Like, this is a great fetish. Like, come on, right? Like, this kid's going to want to go to college, right? Let's make this money now. When did you rest? Like, when were you home? Why were you with all of those people for all of so much of that pregnancy and remembering my partner and my family going like, you know, you really don't need to go on that trip. You know, you really could stay home. You know, you really could lay down and take a nap. And people are telling me what I, like, what you can't do, what you, you know, and I didn't like that. Like, don't tell me what I can't do. I'm Superwoman and I'm going to be Superwoman. And when I'm looking back at these pictures, I'm like, bitch, you look tired. What were you doing? And no, there was no pressure. It was self-induced pressure to show up, to not, you know, not let the ball drop and those kind of things. And so I think that in the moment, I did not take care of myself the way that I should, but being able to reflect back and say, you had really amazing supportive people telling you otherwise, and you were choosing not to listen. And I think, I don't know who, maybe it was Stacey who said that we were going to talk about asking for help, right? Okay, well, sometimes people are like offering it to you, you know, and you're still like resisting it. So just like being, yeah, like, ew, why are you telling me that? Do I look like I need that? Like, yeah, you do. So like being more cognizant of people are telling you because they know they're noticing something that maybe you're not noticing in yourself. And if you love and trust them and you know that they love and trust you, like it's okay to listen and to take that. So that's one thing. So now I listen more when, like, when the kids are like, you need a nap. I'm like, oh, maybe I do. I'm like, I'm tired, you know? And the second turning point for me, and this was kind of recent in the pandemic. So my family were quarantined together in the house and have been for going on forever. And like on Friday nights, we were camping as a couple. We were doing a couple shows, and I found out that without my partner's like permission or consent, like I was making that like our intimate date night, like every, like it was everything night. And you know, he had to say to me like, you know, like this is work, right? You know, and I'm like, oh, like I thought we were getting like a 3-for-1. It's like we're getting paid, we're spending time together. Yeah, and I'm getting sex, and like you know, we've sent the kids upstairs, downstairs to grandma's house, you know, and go, and him really helping me see like, no, we need to compartmentalize these experiences because we're not going to get a full experience of either camming or a full experience of a date night as long as, you know, like we're trying to, I was trying to do a 2-for-1, you know, thing. So those are some moments, recent moments that made it really clear that I can do better about recognizing when I do need to take care of myself and also needing to compartmentalize. Just because you can like have an orgasm in work doesn't mean that that's the orgasm that's supposed to go under your I took care of myself today box.
Thanks for joining us today. Jesse and I are dedicated to platforming sex worker voices and covering important political issues for those in the sex trades. But we can't do it without your help.
If you believe in our mission, find us at patreon.com/peepshowpodcast and show us some love.
We're also seeking advertisers to help us grow. Thanks for helping us make Peep Show happen.
Hard when you work as a couple. I mean, we work as a couple too. And I think that those lines get really blurry and you have to like step back and think like, well, wait, what is us? And what is this like Jesse and PJ Sage, you know, like, and those things, I think you have to be really conscious to not slip into like living out. I mean, and Ashley was talking about this too, like not just living as your persona, even if that like is very close to you, even if your, you know, sex work persona is very close to who you are, it's still a job. It's not like you in your life. And I think that being able to separate those out and think a little bit about what your time looks like, why you don't have to, while you're watching a movie at night, also be interacting with your OnlyFans and scrolling Twitter and doing everything else. Yeah, so we're going to move into like talking to each of you about your particular areas of expertise. I was going to start with Ashley. And on a personal note, one of the reasons that I was so interested in bringing Ashley on is because one of the things that I started doing during quarantine is that I
I quit drinking and didn't even really realize that that was a problem for me until I stopped. And so I did want to talk about like being a sex worker and being sober or not drinking, and what kind of motivated her to start this group, this sex working AA group. But I also just wanted to ask you a little bit about what that process has been like for you and why you think a sex working or a AA space that's specifically for sex workers is important. So, Ashley.
Oh man, I have been going to AA meetings for, I've been in and out of, you know, treatments and rehabs and psych wards and all that since I was like 14. So I have many different programs. And off the bat, even before sex work, there is this stigma with sex and sex work. You know, I've even been a Sex Addicts Anonymous, and the way that workers, they're the problem. And I've always been so sex positive, and I hate the way that it's painted. And especially going into the pandemic, I've always, in every AA group, I'm honest about my job. And you find that there are people who want to take advantage of you because of your job in the rooms, and that becomes a big problem, you know. And I couldn't go to meetings because of the pandemic, and I was so terrified of going to these Zoom meetings with, you know, complete strangers who don't know what I do. And then when you go to them, you hear people say certain things about porn or sex work or escorting, and the support that they get with the negative stigma that they're spewing out makes me really uncomfortable. And it doesn't make me want to, you know, stay sober in a sense, because it's like, well, how can I believe that any of this is truly, you know, helpful? How can I believe what you're saying, sobriety is so important, when you're also putting down, you know, people and judging people? And it was so hard. And I just stopped going to meetings. And then all of a sudden I was like, you know what? I have met, you know, one or two sex workers here and there from AA. And it's funny because I've always been a big advocate about sobriety. And I would tweet about that I'm going to meetings, and I'd be like, oh, there's a meeting in LA that I go to. They know I'm a sex worker. They're actually, you know, very friendly towards sex workers. And I'd have people DM me and meet me at the meetings, you know, in person. Sex workers I'd never met. I'm like, oh my gosh, we need more of this, because when we're together, you can relate. Because you can't go into an AA meeting talking about a terrible client you had who, you know, brought alcohol, and, or, you know, you didn't know what to do for CAM, so you wanted to do shots and you didn't know what to do, and, you know, or going sober and your whole persona being the party girl, and then going sober and being like, okay, well, what, how do I market myself now? I'm not going to do that. And so I just tweeted one day, I'm like, who would join a sex workers AA meeting? My bad. And turns out a ton of people. And I just kind of put it together. I reached out to sex workers who had been in the industry for, you know, 8-10 years and had a very large amount of sobriety under their belt, to make sure that I was, you know, having people rooted into this program that have even more experience than me in sobriety and in sex work. And we have been doing it for literally since like the pandemic started. And we have members who have been going, you know, since the start. And the thing that we always talk about is how it's so nice to actually talk about your job with no filter, and be able to actually process these, you know, traumatic experiences that happen, or clients that really trigger your drinking that you can't explain, because how are you supposed to deal with the sobriety and sex work if you can't even talk about your job in the rooms? That is the beauty of the meeting, because we can go in and go, oh my God, I fucked this client and blah, 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 this happened. You know, there was an open bar, yada, yada. And everyone's just like, oh my God, this has happened to me. And so we can all relate. And it's such a freeing feeling to just know there's no judgment whatsoever, because everyone is in sex work. And we have, you know, people who do escorting. We have people who just do OnlyFans. We have, you know, porn stars. Everyone, we have people who are brand new to sex work. We have survival sex workers, and we have people in the rooms who have been in sex work for like, you know, 12 years. So, and it's nice hearing from different perspective and different, you know, people in the industry that like, oh, cam girls and porn stars and escorts, we're all still struggling with the same kind of rooted issues in sobriety. And it's cool because, you know, people who have gone to the meetings now are actually coming in and saying, oh, now I'm, you know, 6 months, now I'm 7 months, and I'm watching everyone grow and obtaining more sobriety because of the rooms, because now we can actually process how sex and addiction can kind of intertwine in a sense. So
That's really cool.
That's amazing. Thanks for what you do. One quick follow-up question. You had meetings at the AVN convention. Is that something you plan on putting together in the future when we're all able to start going to conventions again, like 3 years down the line?
I actually did not put those together specifically, but the other people who have helped with this AA group that I'm starting were the ones who did the meeting. And, you know, they helped me get contacts for the Zoom meeting, and we all worked together in all of our aspects and put together the Zoom meeting. But definitely, I want to do AA meetings in person for sex workers in LA, because I have like a really nice setup at my house. And I told everyone, you know, if you need to talk and you need a place to go, like, we can do things at my house. I did like a sobriety birthday for myself, and, you know, all my AA friends in the area got tested, and we all celebrated my sober birthday together. I've done AA meetings, you know, on the Zoom. And then I have a couple of sex workers who live in LA who've come into my house, and we've just done the meeting, you know, together on here. So definitely, once things are safer, for sure, I want to be able to have weekly meetings in Los Angeles and branch out and find people who are willing to start them in different states. So 100% where I want to go with it.
That's so awesome. Thank you for being so helpful to other people. I have a question for Stacey. Speaking of being helpful, how does your background in adult work help you help other people create boundaries with clients? And can you speak a little bit about what emotional labor looks like and how that idea plays into sex work?
Wow, yeah. So, you know, I think that sex work kind of can generally fall into kind of three really wide categories. Like, it can be entertainment, it can be education, it can be about healing. And I recognized, and I think that Veronica Monet was probably an early influence for me in recognizing that when clients come to us, they are making themselves vulnerable. And I mean, I just have this thing where people start confiding in me. Like, that's always been a thing. So so with clients, they started sharing really heavy stuff with me. And one of them told me once that I'm the only person in his life who knows everything, because he can't even tell his therapist about me, right? So even with his therapist, the fact that he sees a sex worker and the things that he talks to me about, or the fact that he talks to me about the same things maybe that he talks to them about, has to be a secret. So things like that, that was a lot of heavy lifting for me as a young sex worker. And it taught me how much trauma and damage men are also dealing with, even though, like, externally we know that so much like violence and brutalization statistically is driven by men. Men are also the victims of that. It's directed at them too. And so I was able to really develop empathy, but it was really heavy stuff. And I ended up going into my counseling program, inspired by a fellow sex work colleague, after I had already been doing sex work for like 15 years. And I wish that I would have done it sooner. And it wasn't just that doing the sex work, I felt like I needed more skills because of the things I was facing in sex work. Also, as a sex work activist, I was really like, really, I don't know, just, I think it's really good for us to understand our attachment styles. And my attachment style changed once I became a mom and gave birth. And so prior to that, I think I was pretty detached and distant and really like looked at things a little more on the surface and was like, let's be logical and not emotional. And I don't think that's effective as an organizer. And so there were like kind of two different ways that I was approaching going into my counseling certification. And that was, I have like work to do on myself, and this program is about helping me do that work so that I can then show up in my communities and do the work that they need. And so, yeah, half of that is sex workers and their loved ones, because if you can get things kind of cohesive with your loved ones, then sex work can actually be fantastic. It doesn't have to be like, but if you're having to deal with conflict amongst your partners, your parents, or, you know, other people in your life, then the other, you know, the awesome parts of sex work become a lot harder to enjoy. But also doing organizing needed to be a thing. Just kind of my heart had to be more open and more introspective and able to take in more things. And then for the work, I needed more like emotional armor and the ability to really be a guide for these men who are effing lost. And if they are going to therapy, they're going to couples therapy with their wife. And of course they can't talk about us there. So like, we're always this like secret prized private thing in their life. And, they make it our burden. And I really like, I want them to be better humans so that the world would be a better place. And so that was kind of like where I came from, of like, they think they're coming here for the entertainment, but I'm trying to stick in the education and the healing too, whenever I can. And if you tell them that you're marketing the healing I came to find, they don't want to pay for that. So you have to finesse it. And I think sex workers have a unique and special place in society, being able to bring those things together and trick men who need it into growing. I'm sorry, you asked me some other questions too. But
I was asking about emotional labor, but you just said, nah, make them do it. We did kind of plan to actually open that one up to the rest of the panelists, though, before we directly attack the other two. So does anybody want to speak to how emotional labor plays into your work? Well, Jasmine, how about you?
Thank you. Please. I have a lot to share on that, just kind of piggybacking a little bit more on what Stacey was sharing. I think it's important for us to recognize the emotional labor that we do, because you prepare differently for it, right? Like, so if you're going to go in and like, I don't know, I did a workout fetish video this weekend. And so like, you prepare differently for it. It's like, okay, like stretch so that you don't look all like, you know, tight or whatever. Make you look like you're really fit, right? Do some push-ups so that once the camera is on, like your muscles already look pumped, like you prep for it, right? And it really shouldn't be that different. Emotionally, we do have to get into a particular space. We do have to set our boundaries emotionally for, you know, like everything from what you like to be called versus what you will not tolerate being called, and knowing that you're going to a space where you might have to assert those boundaries. That takes, you know, it takes a warm up, a mental warm up to do that. I couldn't agree with you more, Stacey, about sex workers being, I call sex workers first responders for mental health. We are more accessible and more affordable than mental health care in this country. And a variety of different mediums to receive that care. Telehealth, in person, texting, video, telephone, it's, you know what I mean? On demand. It's there. And but I mean, I went to school for a really long time for my credentials, and they're super, super important. But if no one can access them, they're useless. And I feel that way really deeply about mental health care and there being an opportunity for us to bridge the gap with sex workers and the work that we're doing, and also in mental health. One of the things that I am focused on this year, I guess and going into to next year, is training the trainer. So I work with therapists, budding sex therapists and sex educators, on how not to re-traumatize sex workers when they come into your space, And also how sex workers from a business model are like, it's the best business to business model. Sex workers are in front of thousands of people who are struggling with all sorts of things. And we don't want to do, like, we don't want to send our clients straight to hell with our like methods, right? And also we are not logging on because there is a part, I'm sure for many of us that do enjoy that closeness and that emotional intimacy, but not the heavy labor that you were, what we're all mentioning here. And it would be so nice to give a referral or make a recommendation for a sex worker friendly client, or like to that person who says, I can only talk to you about everything. I would love to say, like, fire that therapist, keep seeing me. And let's also go and see that. Let's go see this person. And so we could do all the fun, sexy stuff over here. And you could tell that person about everything and get your money's worth over there. Right. So there is, even from like, I say to therapists all the time, like, you're so like, you're crazy. You don't have any sex worker friends. What do you mean? You're missing out on so many opportunities for clients. And they're like, I don't get it. You know? So I think that it's really, really important for us to see the of course, the value in our work and how much emotional labor we're providing, and really seeing ourselves as first responders. And even as from the perspective of being a first responder, that's not long haul care. That is like, let me stitch you back up. Let me get you feeling like, you know, let me get that smile back on your face. Can we make it for another, you know, hour? And then after this, the next time I see you next week, I want you to tell me that you went and talked to so-and-so, or what, you know, what have you. Because I have clients that are sex workers and they're like, I lose sleep at night because I'm worried about my clients. And I'm like, me too, as a therapist. Like, but we're not, our pay grade is not the same for that kind of emotional labor. You shouldn't be doing my job, but you're doing it because my industry is failing people left and right around giving non-stigmatized mental health care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chelsea, how about you?
I don't think I really have the therapy background. Basically how I view most of sex work is it's a performance. And I feel like that's really what I really focus on, is just being a performer. I feel like just end of the day, I'm not getting paid enough to, I think, give these people like real mental health help. And it's just not really something I've really been comfortable doing in the past, personally, because I feel like, especially camming as much as I do, you really have to think about your own mental health first and foremost. And I feel like that's kind of been my main drive with camming, that it's just a performance. If you want to see the performance, that's great. But usually I don't really have these more like deeper like relationships with my clients per se. It's usually they've seen my work and then they want to see a live performance or either buying work from me. So I think my take's just a little bit different with that maybe.
Okay, so I was going to go to Jasmine now. So I did want to say that I think that all of the things that you all were saying about emotional care is like really important and really interesting. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about the work that you're doing specifically with sex workers through Pineapple and the BIPOC AIC. How do you see that fitting into this like framework of self-care?
Sure. So specifically with BIPOC AIC, which is the Black Indigenous People of Color Adult Industry Collective, there we are, thanks to Trouble Films, we are able to offer a weekly yoga for our entire sex work industry, friends and allies as well, but it is definitely centered around the health and wellness of BIPOC performers. And right before we have yoga, we also are offering a weekly support, stress support groups only for BIPOC performers. And it is so important to have that safe space for any marginalized group or any subculture within a culture, like just having those spaces to talk about the nuances. Ashley, what you were saying about going to AA and being able to go like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm running a little late. I just got done shooting, but I'll be there. Like just that little line is so like, oh, I don't have to think of a lie or a cover up or, you know, I don't have to watch my tone and or speak, you know, switch code for this conversation. And that has been so incredibly crucial. You know, the BIPOC Adult Industry Collective is doing making a lot of efforts to support each other. And there are problems with race and racism in the industry for sure, but there are also a lot of solutions when we put our heads together and take care of each other. And that is what we have been doing through our mutual aid funds, resources, and education and training. So that has been huge. The other part of it for me personally has like being a part of community and with a concentrated goal in mind. Like I didn't realize how much I was missing that, you know, being in as a sex worker, it can be very isolating. You know, your efforts can feel like you're working in a silo or you're experiencing things on alone. And so anytime that you can find community, it's so important. And I just didn't realize how much I was missing, like meetings. It's so strange to say that, right? But like meetings and minutes and shit. Like, I love that shit. It's part of how we've been socialized to work, right? And so there is an aspect when we get into sex work that feels so unstructured, especially when you see an issue or a problem that needs resolution. It can feel really like, I can't take this on by myself. And so BIPOC has been able to meet that need for me while trying to meet the needs of other performers of color. Second to that is, you mentioned Pineapple Support. So Pineapple Support, I've been a therapist, a contracted therapist for them since their inception. And it's been great seeing a lot of people who would otherwise not access care because it's unaffordable or because of not having a sex worker friendly therapist, or at least somebody that you can say, I am a sex worker and I need help. That has been really, really important. And I have, you know, been really fortunate to work with some amazing sex workers through their transition from being supplementing their care through Pineapple Support and then switching over to being private practice clients and seeing that there is value in therapy. So I think I'm out here creating professional therapy clients as well, Stacey. And so I think that, you know, and just really helping people understand that their mental health is not, it doesn't have to be crisis. It doesn't have to only be sought out in crisis. It can be a part of your maintenance care. It can be a part of preventative care, just like other forms of healthcare. So that has been incredibly, incredibly awesome. Challenges are during this time where Pineapple Support is unable to go to AVN and XBiz and having their founder run around and get donations and things of that sort, they've had to limit the amount of care that they can provide performers and the amount of money that they can supplement. And during COVID is when you're seeing an increase of in people accessing mental health care because either you have the time now or you realize like all that negative bad coping skills that you were doing, like that shit does not fly in a house full of your family for 3 months on end. Like everybody's like, oh, you need to go and talk to somebody about that, you know? So a lot of us are running into our own shit now and realizing I need to get help. Pineapple Support has still, in my opinion, been gracious with allowing about the same amount of healthcare that our typical insurance companies will give you, like somewhere between 8 and 12 sessions. And for many people, just giving that, having that spot to start, and then seeing what therapy can do for you if in finding other ways to budget it in, I think is really important. So I super stand for both BIPOC AIC and Pineapple Support.
Hey, Chelsea.
Yes.
I have a question for you. Yeah, totally. We are clearly getting more comfortable with the podcast formula. Okay, here's my question for you. Can you give us a rundown of what a healthy camming schedule looks like for you on a day-to-day basis? I know a lot of people are just like, I'm going to put in 8 hours a day and then you get that burnout. And also maybe you can touch on a little bit what you do to prepare for a porn performance when you're not really in the mood.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I can do more than 3 hours a day or it's a complete burnout. So usually I try to split it in half. So it's only an hour and a half each. So I feel like you don't get that burnt out from, you know, an hour and a half of just like trying on cam. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't feel like you're sitting on forever, like getting hyper caught up in everything. I've shot quite a bit actually during the pandemic with like remote style shooting through Zoom and a few other different apps. And for me, like meditation has really helped me a lot. Just center with my body and just like with my mind and just come at stuff with like a clean slate. So that's been a really big thing for me, and just really mentally, just physically preparing as well. Like if I'm gonna do an anal scene in 2 weeks or whatever, I'm gonna do some sort of anal prep every single day, because I think it's just like with being an athlete, you have to prepare your body where you could really seriously hurt yourself or just be in pain or just uncomfortable afterwards. So I just really try to prepare both mentally and physically for whatever scene's coming up, even if I don't feel like doing anal prep that night or I'm not feeling it the day of, I'm going to meditate and hopefully get into that place. But I think for me, those have been like really the biggest tools for me with my career, like feeling like I turned a corner with just really being both prepared physically and mentally with meditation and just really taking the time to get your body into a place where you can perform.
Here's a quick question that we can kind of go around and ask everybody before we open that up. So what do you all think is missing from the sex work community that could better help sex workers? Like what could there be that would be helpful to you all as like individual workers, or that you think would be good for the community to have?
That there's starting to become more mental health options, I think is really, really important, because when I first got into the industry, there wasn't really anything. And when I first moved here, I was working at the Armory a lot, and there were so many people who I know who had like really bad mental health stuff after working there, like anxiety disorders. And I never had an anxiety attack until I worked there. So I think like that there's now at least some resources is so different. And I think it just needs to become more and more accessible, but I don't know how the pandemic is necessarily going to affect that, because there are more people who need those resources right now. And the funding obviously isn't there, because there aren't events like AVN or XBiz to bring in the same amount of money. So I'm just hoping those become more and more accessible for adult performers. I got a year of free therapy at St. James in SF. It's a sex worker clinic. Everything is free for sex workers there. And that's where I met my current therapist. And I really hope that more people take advantage of the 8 free therapy sessions, or even, you know, 10 weeks just to get somewhere with it, because you can hopefully get some coping skills, at least for your depression, anxiety, where you won't spiral as much. Where I didn't have the resources, I felt like, before going to therapy to identify those like spirals, to like make it stop. So it just doesn't keep getting worse and worse, and you just like keep burning yourself out. I think that those resources are available. I think that's what's really important. I think there needs to be more of those resources.
Yeah. Jasmine, what do you think?
Completely agree with Chelsea. It also seems like a lot of things are happening in a silo. Like I am like Ashley's sex workers, when's the meeting? Cause I need to get my clients in there. You know what I mean? And it's like, if I wasn't on this, you know, on this panel, on this call, I wouldn't know about that. So, you know, we're developing a resource list over at BIPOC AIC, and reaching out to like everybody to, as like we all kind of need a comprehensive lists to send out, you know. So just the collection of resources is so, so important. And the distribution of them as well.
Maybe we could collaborate on distributing that resource list and
I was just thinking that
show as well reach as many people as possible. I wish that we had more. Okay, sorry. What I think is missing in the sex work community, especially in 2020, is pandemic assistance funding. I don't know where it went. I thought like, okay, this is a safe space. Where's the Free Speech Coalition? They gave some people $200 and then like disappeared. So I just wish that there was more assistance coming from the studios and retailers and all of the people that benefit from adult work and labor, especially like these porn people. They're making so much money during the pandemic. They could be putting 20% into the Free Speech Coalition pandemic fund, and some of us could be really doing a lot better. And I'm going to mute myself now so I don't keep going.
Stacey, what do you think?
I would like to see and participate in developing some kind of peer counseling program, because like Jasmine said, we are first responders for our clients and we need to be doing that for each other. And that's kind of in the same spirit of what I was saying about really having to reflect and think about how to come back to activism in a more effective way. Something like that, where we're accessing skills that, you know, really help us take care of ourselves and each other even better.
I have been looking for a psychiatrist, and I reached out to Pineapple, and I've been looking around, and I have not been able to find a psychiatrist that is sex work friendly, or at least I know is sex work friendly. So my first go-to would be, we need a psychiatrist, because there are a lot of psychologists, you know, they can't diagnose you with things. They can't, you know, help you with a plan or put you on medications. And especially being in the rooms with AA, a lot of recovering sex workers, you know, it's hard to get the right medications when you're recovering. And, you know, a lot of, I've had people complain in the rooms, you know, oh, I'm on this anti-anxiety medication and I want to take it when I'm camming, but I'm a little nervous if I'm, you know, if this is a healthy decision for me, is this me, you know, taking it to get, you know, the edge off, or am I really using this for my anxiety? And I feel like if we had psychiatrists who are, you know, specialized in these medications, can kind of help people, you know, talk through on when you should take your medications, you know, how that's going to affect your work, what's a healthy way of doing that, because that has been my personal struggle and what I've noticed, especially with other sex workers and sex workers in recovery, is that there needs to be more education and knowledge and resources for psychiatry.
How does sex work become part of your self-care? And this, we can open it up to your sex life, kink, BDSM, sex work. How do these things actually become part of your caretaking process? This is a space for you to, I mean, like, oh God, when I went back to the strip club this last year, it was such an exhilarating experience because it had been like 10 or 12 years since I'd been on the strip club stage, and I got to go feature dancing, and I felt like being able to do that. I like went back to dance class. I was going to the studio twice a week, and I like reinvented sort of like how I work out and how I exercise, all around sort of revisiting the stripper persona that I once had but had never fully abandoned. So that was like a part of like something that enriched my life, like way, like I didn't really get paid much. Like it wasn't really that kind of thing, but the way that it enriched my life made me think, you know, this sex work gig, there's something about it.
So I always say nobody gave a shit about me as a therapist until I took off all my clothes. So like I've been practicing as a therapist for about 18 years. And like now it's like now psychology today, you care about what philosophies I, you know, impart upon you, those kind of like, wow, you know? So it's been really interesting that living my full authentic sex worker self identity has allowed the other area of my life to shine in a way that I could not have imagined. So that's been pretty awesome. And as a fetish, more in the lane of fetish modeling, there are certain things that my clients like imagine and have it, and their exploration through my body has allowed me to learn so many things. Has allowed a certain level of like acceptance, and this is like TMI, but you said it was a safe space or whatever, right? So, and I'm always looking for any opportunity to talk about things very, very candidly. Just recently, like somebody is just like, "Oh my God, you have the perfect bow tie butthole," and I was like, "My butthole is perfect," you know, like I never even considered that. The amount of like adoration for it, and then I was like, let me see what this person thinks of it, and what, and I was like, oh, I have a stunning butthole. Like, there's something more to love about myself. You know, it seems so silly. But, you know, these moments of like, I'm just turned 40. So like being able to find new things that are sexy and that are admirable and getting attention in other areas, it really is, it's nice, it's affirming, and I love attention. That feels good to me. And so their sex work allows you to say, hey, give me some attention and pay me for it too, without feeling like weird about it. I love it.
Ashley, what do you think?
Okay, so for me, before sex work, I never asked anyone about STD tests. I didn't really care about condoms. I feel like I didn't value my sexuality myself so much, or I just really didn't give a shit. And then going into sex work, all of a sudden I'm like, whoa. I can't, like, I need to ask these people if they're getting tested. I want to see test results, and I'm confident in that. Mm-hmm. I have no problem asking, and if they think I'm weird, they're the weird ones. Like, the confidence that I have in sexual health,
yeah,
and what I want in a partner and communication, mm-hmm, has, you know, changed so much since going in the industry. And like, I feel like that is also what has helped my mom even with supporting, mm-hmm, me. Like, no, look, I have now this sexual education and this, mm-hmm, value for who I want to be with, even if, mm-hmm, it's a one night stand or a partner. You know, mm-hmm, I want safe sex, I want communication. And I learned that through sex work. And I learned to have the confidence to speak up for what I want and my safety. And it definitely has changed the game. And I've had better sex because of it. And I've had, you know, because now I'm not in my head like, oh my God, am I going to get an STD? Like, oh my God, you know, are they whatever? It's like, oh, you know, all the cards are on the table and my confidence is there and I can leave comfortably without stress.
Mm-hmm. Stacey?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would echo a lot of what Ashley said, that you know, for me, sex work definitely gave me more confidence and made me feel like I have a right to demand the things that I want. And mm-hmm, I don't think that that was something that I learned in childhood at all. Mm-hmm. So sex work definitely, and sex work enabled me to have the kind of relationships that were suitable for my detached style, which was like, they give me something up front and I don't care what happens afterward. And to some extent, like, it made it really easy to develop ongoing long-term relationships with repeat clients. And so, yeah, I think that it, like, really healthy communication and connection building on my own terms was pretty good for me.
Chelsea?
I think for me, like, making films is just really my medium, I figured out over the, mm-hmm, years. I started playing in bands when I was in my teens and stuff, and I always assumed that was going to be the medium I move forward with, but the more I shoot films, it's just what I realize I really want to do and really, mm-hmm, get the most creative feeling out of just working with four or five people on a set and, like, being able to create something together and then be able to have that film, like, be viewed by people all over the world or be able to, like, travel to screenings to, like, show people it. I feel like that's just, like, probably the most rewarding thing in my life. And I think that's the biggest thing sex work has done. Mm-hmm. I think camming's kind of whatever to me. I think it can be really draining and stuff, but I feel like the actual making films is definitely the reason I'm still in sex work and still the most, mm-hmm, fulfilling thing I feel like I can do.
All right, Liz, do you have any reflections or any questions from the audience or from yourself?
So I don't see any questions in the chat, but I want to know what past self-care practices, this goes for any of the panelists, what past self-care practices did you find to be actually more harmful than beneficial for you? Mm. And like, your self-care practices over your life journey or sex work journey, like, how have they adapted and changed?
Mm. That's a good question.
Liz has been thinking.
Yeah, this one is a good one. I think that comes up is, like, not rewarding myself with taking care of myself. It's not a reward. Mm-hmm. It is a part of the job. Like, it, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? It's, yeah, a part of my existence to be, mm-hmm, to make sure that I am okay and to make sure I am well. So, and this is an active thing. I don't want to, like, I don't I haven't reached like nirvana with this shit here. It's like, or it's a daily practice, but that thing in my mind when being a kid, like when you get done with your work, then you can, when you finish your food, you can drink. When you did it, you can, like all of this like negotiation, right? Like if you are good, you can get what you need. That actually is not, that's not healthy. It's not a healthy practice. So for me now, it's kind of like, get what you need, and then you'll probably be able to do what you need to do instead of the like, okay, just finish this email and then you can go eat. No, that's not work. That's flip-flop, you know? So I would just say that that practice does not work for me. It's trying to reward myself with what I need to take care of myself. I just need to take care of myself.
And sometimes rewards, should be something rewards else. Can have like monetary punishments. So you can end up spending a lot of money on self-care. And at that point, I'm like, maybe you should work less. And you're making less money, but like, then you're not having to spend the money on massages and, you know, the cycle. But anyways, that was really smart. Stacey.
Oh, well, I just think the, you know, the paradigm of self-love, it is important, and we should all be exploring self-love, but I think that it gets distorted into, like, if people are treating you crummy, it's because you don't love yourself enough, or you have to wait to get the love you want from other people until you perfect your self-love. I think that's a lot of BS, and it leaves you open to a lot of abuse that is possibly unintentional because you're encountering people with fucked up attachment styles. I think self-love because it makes you a better human, yes, but it shouldn't be a barrier in how you relate to others.
Cactus asks, do you have any grounding practices that work well for you when you're feeling stressed, anxious, burnt out, any of that?
I feel like Chelsea spoke to some meditation practices earlier, and I've seen you do a 30 second meditation. Maybe you could start by explaining that.
Yeah, I've been meditating a lot. I converted to Buddhism last year, and just a lot of that's been really centering for me. Just, I feel like when you're in such a materialistic career, because it's still hitting goals on campsites and all this stuff where you almost have to like concentrate on if I need to make this amount today or this amount today. And I think just kind of trying to detach from all that and just trying to let all that stuff go away has been really, really helpful to me. But I think that definitely does come with a position of power, because knowing that you can actually make all your goals, which isn't something people that necessarily not everyone can do. But I think for me, just not hyper focusing on what didn't happen, because I was almost too hard on myself with perfectionism, where I'm like, well, if this one thing didn't happen, this thing's a failure. And I think now I'm kind of more able to let things go and not get caught up in the little like materialism of even just getting everything on your to-do list done every day. I think that's probably been the biggest thing for me, and meditation's really helped with that.
I was thinking, you know, I'm not a panelist, but I'm going to jump in here anyway. I was thinking about what Jasmine was saying about like putting your own needs forward. One of the hardest things for me about like erotic performance and during quarantine in particular is that there's no separation between anything. So I'm like dealing with my kids and tripping over toys and doing stuff. And then I have like clients who want me to turn on like sexy, like on the turn of a dime. And that's all really difficult. And sometimes it's not, and sometimes it really is, because the environment around me is really chaotic, or there's something else going on, or we're having an intense discussion about something, and then I have to get pulled out of that to go into suddenly I'm in sexy mode. And I think that what I've like been really working on doing to help that is to go through like a ritual of taking care of myself, of doing my hair, of, you know, setting up my makeup. And that's all like part of the work. But for me, like, it's not necessarily about the end result, but about like putting myself like in a space that I'm moving out of like domestic, like I'm cleaning the house and dealing with my kid's therapist and talking, you know, to these people to like, okay, now I'm going to move into this space where I'm shifting gears. And that's had to be really conscious, because when I was trying to just work at the same time as doing everything else, I was finding it really difficult to get in the headspace of working and then to get out of it too. It's not just getting into it, it's also getting out of it and not wanting to stay like in fantasy mode. And I think that it's required like a restructuring of like, okay, today I'm going to work on Peep Show stuff, and this day I'm going to work on sex work stuff. And the day that I'm going to work with sex work stuff, I'm going to put aside other sorts of distractions so that I can get in the headspace of performing like sexuality.
So for anxiety, or like for if you're anticipating like going into a meeting or going in to film something, I have a little life hack, which is 5-4-3-2-1. Five things I can see, four things I can touch, three things I can hear, which you might have to be creative with yourself, two things I can taste, one thing I can smell, right? And so it's just having a little check-in with each of your senses and a little like mind game with yourself with counting. And it only takes a few seconds. It's just a little like self scan.
How about you, Ashley? Do you have any grounding practices that work well for you when you're feeling stressed, anxious?
Definitely meditation, like Chelsea said. I got sober through a Buddhist recovery program, so I 10 out of 10. Even if you aren't interested in Buddhism, it's definitely still something to check out. And even just like take what you get out of it, because there is so much positive. But in regards to working and being stressed and feeling burnt out, I sometimes do sexting sessions, and I will, you know, from 9 to 12, I'm online taking sexting sessions or phone calls. And sometimes, you know, it's a dry night, nothing's happening, and I get stressed and I'm, you know, freaking out. And it's like, oh my God, like I blocked all this time to do this, and now I'm not going to make any money. And sometimes I have to go, you know what, maybe I won't make money tonight, but let me take this time to take photos or make a video. And I'm not going to get that immediate reward, that immediate money, but it's still investing in, you know, my business. And I can sleep at night going, well, I didn't make money, but this will contribute to money in the future. And, you know, if it's a dry night, accept it. And that's okay. You know, I feel like we set goals of, I want to make this much money today. And sometimes we can't control that. It's not going to happen. Sometimes clients just aren't going to hit us up. So what can we do? What can I do to make myself feel less stressed, knowing that I'm still investing in my work, you know, valuing my time, but not being stressed that I'm not getting that immediate reward with money.
That's really good.
Really, that really resonates with me. I think that's like super important. I know that we sometimes we're just cranking out content, you know, and you're great. It's awesome. And you're like, oh, there's a whole, you know, there's a bunch of customs we have to do. And that means like money is actually coming in. And that's great. But then you start to get detached from like why you like doing things in the first place, because you're like doing so much work for other people and other people's fantasies and other people's desires. And like, sometimes it's just really nice to actually have those slow moments, because then you can stop and be like, let's just make some art. Let's make something we think is really hot or beautiful or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, I know this isn't going to make the most money, but like, it still is like totally on brand. People will see it and think like, oh, they're doing cool stuff. It'll probably come back in some other way. We don't have to like evaluate it by how many sales we have. Or like maybe they're just images, and maybe they're just lewds and not nudes. So we know we're not even getting directly paid for them. But sometimes it's just so much, it's like restorative just to make something we're actually like proud of, that we feel is like, I don't know, reaching our artistic potential or whatever, or you know, that like works for us and not just for other people. Yeah.
If you need a new hoodie or a mug, you can get some merch, Peep Show Media. Also, we are looking for money from the writer's grant that for this holiday season also. So if you want to help our writer's grant, we give money to sex workers to write pieces for peepshowmedia.com. If that's something you want to do for the holidays, you can donate at peepshowmedia.com/support.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. And thank you. Thanks for the people who came and hung out and listened. Yeah. And for the people who couldn't make it, we will put this up on YouTube and on the podcast later.
We do this once a month, so you can follow the Twitter, Peep Show Media, or look on the website under events, because that's where we put it for what we do in January and February.
Love it.
Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Peep Show Podcast. I'm PJ Sage, and you can find me on Twitter at PJ Sage.
And I'm Jesse Sage, and you can find me on Twitter at sapiotextual or at jessesage.com.
We would like to remind you that we have a Patreon account and would appreciate your support. Please visit patreon.com/peepshowpodcast. Our music is courtesy of Joe Kennedy. The show was produced by Jesse and PJ Sage.
Signing off. Have a great week.